In a few minutes, the big companies forced to mix family matters with corporate matters. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The first round of speeches at the Democratic National Convention clustered around the theme of party unity last night. Bernie Sanders, with some passion, called on his supporters to back Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. But many on hand remain frustrated at some of Clinton's positions on economic issues, including trade. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is in Philadelphia covering the convention for us. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So how did the Hillary versus Bernie tension look from the ground level?
It really depended on where you were. Inside the convention, people were really excited and they had lots of energy for Hillary Clinton as a nominee, as well as for unifying the party. But if you went outside, there was also lots of energy, but it was directed towards things like protests. I spoke to so many people who were frustrated about this email scandal and really feeling excluded by what they call the political elite.
Now, when you talk to people demonstrating, since this is Marketplace, what economic issues did they have on their minds?
On their minds, as well as on their signs, buttons, and T-shirts and everything, lots of people were talking about issues like TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, and for $15 as a national minimum wage, calling for that. There were many other economic issues that people mentioned to me. I met 32-year-old Angie Matos on the outskirts of one of the demonstrations, and she summed up a lot of what I heard.
My biggest issue, I think, is just the money in politics and the corruption. A lot of these issues come from that core issue, and it's a systematic problem. And I think if we can address that, a lot of these other issues will have a better chance of resolving them.
There was just this general feeling that right now this economy is going very well for very few and pretty rough for the rest of us.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams at the convention in Philadelphia. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
It is my job to keep an eye on markets. The 100-share index in London is up 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are little changed at this point. Crude oil in New York is staying low, down another 1% to $42.69 a barrel. The euro is up slightly at $1.10. British Prime Minister Theresa May is meeting with Irish Prime Minister Enda Kenny today. The talks are centered on the economic and border issues arising from the UK's decision to leave the European Union. That Irish border with Northern Ireland becomes the EU non-EU transition zone. Here's Russell Padmore with our partner broadcaster, the BBC.
The prospect of a so-called soft border is there. Remember, this is the only land border that a post-EU exit Britain would have with another country. The Republic of Ireland, of course, is quite worried, and this is why the Taoiseach Enda Kenny is determined to have this meeting in Downing Street in London today, air some rather constructive topics with his British counterpart, the Prime Minister Theresa May. Trade between both countries, well, from an Irish perspective, Ireland exports nearly $20 billion of services and products to the UK every year, while the UK exports to Ireland about $23 billion every year. So you can see from an economic standpoint, there's quite a lot at stake.
Taoiseach is like Prime Minister. The ugly mess surrounding the future of the Viacom media empire proceeds, with lawyers now battling over whether 93-year-old chief executive Sumner Redstone should be forced to take a new psychiatric exam. Either way, 80% of Viacom and CBS shares are owned by an investment company controlled by the Redstone family. Think of your worst holiday meal with the extended family. Then imagine that family ran a business. Then imagine that family ran a huge publicly traded conglomerate. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore takes a look at how other family-controlled companies try and sometimes fail to avoid high-pitched drama.
The problem with family businesses is that they're businesses run by families.
The family is actually the biggest risk a family business faces.
Megan Jude is a fourth-generation member of the family that owns Ideal Industries, based out of Sycamore, Illinois. They employ about 1,200 people and make electrical equipment and tools.
If you have family members who are, like you see in the newspapers, suing each other or suing the board or suing the management team, those are extremely risky situations.
What happens is that family drama sucks the attention away from the actual business. It can even take the business down. And one of the biggest sources of family drama is succession.
So that when you get to family businesses that are, you know, third, fourth, fifth generations, there are almost none.
But there are some, and Dennis Jaffe has studied them. He's with Wise Counsel Research.
families avoid those kinds of conflicts by working on succession long, long ago. They should be preparing the next generation.
The more a family member holds power all to him or herself, the more the family business becomes like a royal court, where it's all about who has influence, not reason or talent. But even if a family gets the transition right, as families grow, there's still the issue of how to coordinate everyone.
It is pretty hard.
Edouard Tissen is co-founder of Trusted Family. They advise multi-generational family businesses.
You have 10, 15, 20 family members suddenly with more and more diversity. They spread out over different cities, sometimes even countries.
The solution, says Dennis Jaffe, is to run the family like you would any formal organization.
They have to have a set of rules. They have to have a government, a way of voting, a way of making decisions.
Jaffe says some large families go so far as to have a family constitution to keep everyone on the same page.
That's my full-time job.
Megan Judé's actual job title is chair of the family council and the nominating and governance committee. Her family is five generations strong. There's 50 of them now. They have meetings where they study the business, they make collective decisions, and they start training each generation early, starting with playtime for the littlest kids.
As they get older, we'll bring them in for interactive plant tours. And then as they get into high school, we'll do internships for the kids who want them.
Judé says the biggest benefit to being a family business is that you can do things you couldn't if you had to constantly appease shareholders.
For example, last year we were looking at our pension plan and realized that it wasn't sufficient and it didn't align with our values enough, so we increased it.
So families are family businesses' greatest risk, but perhaps their greatest asset too. In New York, I'm Sabri Benashour for Marketplace.
And I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college accountant? How does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.